And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Thursday, December 14th, 2017 here. Sure happy it's Thursday. Sure happy it's Thursday. Sure happy it's Thursday. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer that phone, put you on the air with your comments and questions. So let's just get right on into it because there's a lot going on. Now, Roy Moore has issued a campaign statement. He is still refusing to concede, and apparently part of the complication, we had a caller who called in yesterday who said the military ballots had not arrived in time for the actual election. But according to the Secretary of State of Alabama, John Merrill, the overseas ballots can continue to come in until noon on December 19th. Now, this is a very, very close election, and it's close enough where it could easily trigger the state's automatic recount law. Now, of course, Doug Jones is out there saying it's time for Moore to move on. This is over and done with. Nothing's going to change. But it is very tight, and it's almost starting to remind me of Florida in 2000 with all the comments about confusing ballots and everything else that's going on here. Now, over at InfoWars, they got this video where Jones supporters were being interviewed on the air, and one of them made a bizarre comment saying, "We came from different parts of the country to vote him in, and we got him elected." In fact, the direct quote was, he was asked, "Were you excited to see this victory?" And the man answers, "Because we came here all the way from different parts of the country as part of our fellowship, and all of us pitched in to vote and canvass together, and we got our boy elected." Well, Alabama elections are not supposed to have anybody coming from outside the state to vote. And there's another story that's coming on around where apparently busloads of Democratic voters were brought into the voting stations. And nobody knows where those buses came from. But it was reported for three out of every four of the polling stations, buses full of Democratic voters were being brought in. Now, Newsweek is reporting on the thousands of felons that were registered to vote in the weeks leading up to the Alabama Senate election. And apparently, Pastor Kenneth Glasgow, who spearheaded the effort, said that on the November 27th registration deadline that they had registered something like 10,000 people statewide, former felons. So, again, another dirty election, another dirty election. All right, let's grab ourselves a phone call. Jim in Chicago, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. The thing that disturbs me today, and there are a lot of things, regarding what the FCC did and what this Congress is going to do when it comes to the tax bill, which is going to hurt middle-class America. I mean, what the FCC is doing, it sounds like we're going to be a banana republic pretty soon if we aren't there already.
Well, we're pretty much there already, and I was going to comment on the FCC's vote a little bit later in the show, and it was 3-2, very close, and I really had a problem with the comment made by the guy who was sort of moderating the whole thing, that this is a victory for consumers and entrepreneurs, and we're going to take the politicians out of the process. But no, this is a giveaway to the big ISPs who, as we reported yesterday, lavished something like $100 million all across the House and Senate to try and get their support. And so these ISPs are no longer going to be behaving like common carrier phone companies. They can be selective. They can deny access to traffic unless you're paying them. It means that all of these big internet companies like Spectrum will give the Fastlane access to what they make money off of, and everybody else gets shoved over to the side. And I got to tell you, here in Hawaii, Spectrum internet is already abysmal. We pay for 300 megabits per second, and we're getting maybe 60. And I keep calling and complaining, and they keep saying, "Well, we know we're working on the problem." Blah 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 blah.
Well, Michael, tell me this though: how is it going to affect the average person like me, you, or anyone else when it comes to paying our cell bill or our telephone bill?
Well, I don't know about the telephone or the cell phone bill, but I expect what we're going to see is a change in the way internet access is billed, where there'll be a tiered system. And Spectrum already does it. The low end is 60 megabits per second, which is what we're actually getting. And then for more money, you can have more access. And I think that situation is probably going to get a lot worse. Basically, it means that large corporations who've got money will have top access to the bandwidth, and small operations like independent media are going to get shut out.
Right. Now, is there anything that the average person can do? It sounds like the Congress was bribed again, and basically we're just not allowed to do anything.
It does sound like that, and yes, Congress was bribed. They're there to basically take donations, and in exchange for those donations, they'll do what the donor wants to have done. Unfortunately, that is the state of the nation today.
Right. Well, Michael, I'm going to let you go. You take care.
All right. Thanks an awful lot for the phone call. We're going to let you go, and we're going to do a shout-out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Now then, getting on back to the Doug Jones-Roy Moore election, as soon as they announced Doug Jones had won, liberals hopped onto social media to basically attack all white people in the aftermath of the election result, which is weird because both candidates were white. But for some reason, they equate whiteness with Roy Moore, and Doug Jones, who is white, was apparently the darling of the blacks. And another incident on the same situation, not too long ago, Kentucky State Representative Dan Johnson was under investigation for alleged sexual molestation, and he committed suicide just yesterday, in fact. He denied the charges, was never charged criminally, but he committed suicide, and liberals got on social media cheering his suicide. Now, this guy was a father and a grandfather, along with being a state representative. And here's the thing. Have you noticed how liberals, if you say anything offensive or hurtful to them, they trigger? Oh, the snowflakes, we're offended. But they certainly don't hesitate to dish it back out the other way, do they? It's another one of those double standards. We can be mean and abusive and cruel to you, but you can't be mean and abusive and cruel to us, you know, or you're being racist, or you're being this, or you're being that. Now, things are getting very interesting in these hearings into what's been going on with the investigation into Trump. Trey Gowdy is in full Gowdy mode, and he's just really pounding on these people. And what has now surfaced are these tweets, these texts between Peter Strzok and FBI lawyer Lisa Page. And an excerpt clearly shows that the Russia investigation was started before the election and was called as an insurance policy. In other words, Peter Strzok was going to make sure that if Trump won the presidency, he would be impeached and overthrown. Now, that very clearly is bias and conflict of interest. And I love the comment that Jim Jordan made about it, saying that Peter Strzok thinks he's James Bond. He's going to save the nation from inside the FBI. But clearly, this investigation was being political, and the goal of it wasn't to investigate a crime. The goal, as stated by Peter Strzok, was to find a way to get Donald Trump out of the White House if he won the election. So Trey Gowdy was out there roasting the Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, saying, what the heck is going on here? Because he's pointing out that the reason you have a special counsel is because of conflicts of interest. And we don't like conflicts of interest because it undermines people's confidence in both the process and the result. And lo and behold, those that are supposed to make sure there are no conflicts of interest seem to have a bit of their own. And he's absolutely right. The whole reason for a special counsel is to avoid the entire Justice Department or the entire Congress from expressing their political biases. Special counsels are supposed to be objective and unbiased. And in this case, Mueller and virtually everybody that was on his staff were pro-Hillary and anti-Donald Trump. And now we have these tweets, these text messages from Peter Strzok, where they literally are admitting that this whole Russia investigation was a plan to find a way to get Trump out of the White House and reverse the will of the American people. So I think at this point, Trump would be fully justified in firing Mueller. Because after all these months, $7 million, they found nothing. They got a few indictments of some Trump associates for things completely unconnected to the campaign. They have come up short on anything that shows Russia had anything to do with the campaign last year. And by the way, Putin had a press conference earlier today in which he once again said, no, we don't do that. We don't need to do that. Now, over at Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton, the president there, is saying the question about what to do with all of this goes way beyond Robert Mueller. And the real question is it time to shut down the FBI? Because the FBI has been turned into a KGB-type operation by the Obama administration. And Fitton is a little off on that last one. It was a KGB type operation going all the way back to COINTELPRO in the 1960s. But it's not about law enforcement. It's not about investigation. It's not about crime prevention. It's about enforcing the will of whoever is in power to cover up crimes by the elites, to harass people who want to get the truth out there. And he comes on out and says, you got to remember, Fusion GPS, which is now suspected of being a CIA front, was a Hillary Clinton campaign vendor, and the Department of Justice was working hand in glove with them, perhaps paying them money. We know that Hillary did, the DNC did, and the FBI did, and that is also connected to Peter Strzok. There was no barrier, no wall between the Clinton campaign and the Department of Justice and the FBI. It was just one big party politic machine. Now, somebody else who is facing tough questions from the House Judiciary Committee was FBI Director Christopher Wray himself. And basically, the issue is about spying on the American people without warrants. And obviously, the Fourth Amendment says that is not supposed to happen. But Director Wray basically was asked, how many Americans have been spied on under what is called Section 702. Now, Section 702 was part of the FISA Amendments Act, and basically, Section 702 is being used to violate the privacy guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment. Section 702 authorizes the acquisition of foreign intelligence information. However, the FBI holds the view that because Americans communicate with foreign persons outside the United States every single day, that all of our communications are being captured and read without a warrant. And Congress said, how many Americans have you spied on? FBI Director Wray refused to answer. Not the first time the FBI has withheld things from Congress, even though the House Judiciary Committee has oversight responsibility. Now, the other big scandal that's starting to percolate up is the Uranium One deal. And there was a comment by Senator John Barrasso saying that the Obama administration misled everybody on the Uranium One deal. They didn't have the details, including the fact that Russia was going to wind up with 20% of U.S. uranium. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission Commissioner, Christine Svinicki, responded to questions saying that, yeah, the Obama administration had not fully depicted the complexity of the transaction, which gave the Kremlin control of all that American uranium. So it was being rammed through, and the officials who were supposed to make that decision were being deceived by the Obama administration. Now, here's a story that's getting really interesting. Apparently, Fox News on the morning show today said that they have a contact that says there's an audio tape of the meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch, and that we need to keep our eyes out for that. Now, maybe it's a real audio tape, or maybe Loretta Lynch and Bill got together and staged something talking about their grandkids, but we'll see what happens when it comes on out. Yet another issue that is dogging the administration is this big stink over this lady, Omarosa Newman, who was a former star on Donald Trump's show The Apprentice, and then she was hired as a White House aide. And yesterday, the White House announced that she will leave the Trump administration. Then she went on the news and said, no, she's not. And now the Wall Street Journal is saying that her departure was abrupt, describing her exit as confrontational. And apparently an unnamed White House official told the Wall Street Journal that Omarosa Newman was physically removed from the White House campus late Tuesday evening. So there was some kind of a big blow up there as well. All right, so let's get into the war zones here. There's a lot going on. Syrian army is preparing for an operation in Idlib, and basically the Syrian Arab army and the National Defense Forces have established control over the hilltops of Al-Amar, Al-Majahan, and Al-Kazan inside the Beit Jin pocket in southern Syria. And so it looks like they're about to divide that pocket into two separate parts. And if this is done, the liberation of Mug al-Amir by government troops will just be a matter of time. Divide and conquer. We've all heard that phrase before. Now, there's an article that came out over at The Real News saying that Putin's Syria victory, and let's be honest, that's what happened. The U.S. wanted to take over Syria. Putin stopped them. But this story over at The Real News is saying the proxy war is going to continue and is probably going to ramp up in neighboring Lebanon. This is according to Syria expert and scholar Joshua Landis. So Syria is just mutating into another form of war, and Lebanon may be in the crosshairs. We certainly know Lebanon is in Israel's crosshairs. They still want that Litani River. Supporting that idea that Israel may go into Lebanon, apparently Israel's intelligence affairs minister Yisrael Katz, in an interview on Saudi media, threatened to attack Lebanon to prevent an Iranian military presence, which even some of Netanyahu's associates are saying doesn't really exist. But they're out there with the war talk saying they're going to attack Lebanon to prevent an Iranian military presence. Notice the word prevent. In other words, he's conceding there may not be an Iranian presence there at the moment. We're just going to bomb Lebanon just in case. So everybody is now piling on to Iran and making up all these stories about all the horrible things Iran is doing. And it's basically Saddam's nuclear weapons all over again. More lies to start another war. Meanwhile, up in Damascus, the militant groups and the Syrian government have started talks to end al-Nusra's presence in eastern Damascus. Al-Nusra appears to have sort of wound down, and they're thinking about leaving, and they're going to negotiate safe passages and make sure that nobody gets hurt on the way out here. Now, we're still dealing with the aftermath of Donald Trump's decision that he personally recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. It's caused a huge backlash all over the world. And it looks like the propaganda policy is to make it look like it's all the fault of those people who got upset, that Trump didn't do anything wrong, Israel's done nothing wrong. And so now the White House is accusing Abbas of preventing peace with criticism. In other words, the implied message is, if you want peace, you will never criticize anything Israel does. I'll tell you right now, that's a non-starter. And apparently, getting on back Omarosa, she was on Good Morning America this morning. She's denying that there was a big fight or stink at the White House when she was fired here. So he said, she said. Now then, apparently over in Turkey, three of their major political parties have issued a joint declaration regarding Jerusalem, calling on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and all other countries to recognize East Jerusalem as the capital of an independent Palestine. Well, the OIC has already done that. They did that yesterday. And so this is not going away. Trump has bungled this horribly. And again, it appears that there was a failure of analysis, because Trump clearly wasn't expecting this backlash, and neither was Netanyahu. I really think they assumed that if Trump said it was so, that the rest of the world would go along with it. And it didn't happen. Apparently, a prominent South African university is now boycotting Israel over the Jerusalem situation. And so the Council of the Tshwane University of Technology has resolved that the university will not forge any ties with Israel or any of its organizations or institutions. And they're calling for the end of the illegal occupation of the Palestinian territories. Now, the U.S. State Department is responding to the complaints from Palestine, or rather the complaints about Palestine, and certainly to the comment about how the United Nations should step in for a peace plan. And the State Department is saying, no. The U.S. is still working on the peace plan. We're still going to be in charge of that. Well, nobody's going to listen to them. Israel will, because the U.S. gives Israel whatever they want. But Palestine has already said, we're not talking to you anymore over the peace issue. And the rest of the Mideast has said, the United States is now thoroughly discredited as a peace mediator. Meanwhile, apparently, the Saudi newspapers are reporting Israel has invited Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to take over the peace negotiations between Israel and Palestine. And I don't think Palestine is going to go along with that one either. It should be at the United Nations. This should be an issue for the United Nations. This has gone on long enough, and it's time for the United Nations to grow a spine and deal with its rogue member, Israel. And I say that because of a couple of different things. First of all, Israel currently holds the all-time record for most UN resolutions passed against a country complaining of how they behave. And second, it must be remembered that Israel's membership at the United Nations carried with it two conditions. The first condition was a Palestinian right of return to all the homes and towns that they'd been displaced from during the creation of Israel. And the second condition was that if the Palestinians, of their own free will, chose not to return, that Israel would financially compensate them for their lost property. Israel has not complied with either one of those conditions. So, yeah, this should be at the United Nations. This should be put to the General Assembly. Going to the Security Council is a total waste because you're going to have Nikki Haley up there going, oh, veto. We must protect Israel. Always protect Israel. Veto. I think maybe it's time for Israel to get kicked out of the United Nations. I'm starting to think maybe the United States ought to get kicked out of the security or at least lose their veto power. Stop being a permanent member because they're abusing the system. Now, so many governments in the Mideast have now said they're not going to meet with Mike Pence, that Pence is now delaying his Middle East trip. They don't have a new date for it, but it basically looks like it would be a waste of time for him to go over there. Nobody wants to talk to him. Over in the town of Nazareth, which is traditionally held as the town where Jesus grew up, has now scrapped all their Christmas celebrations in protest over what Donald Trump has done. So, again, this issue is not going to go away. Trump has managed to seriously mess up our Middle East foreign policy. And maybe he just thinks we're going to go bomb them all anyway, so what does it really matter? But again, I got to tell you, I'm concerned about the lack of careful, well-thought-out analysis on any of these decisions being made. And again, I see it as a symptom of an impending Soviet Union-style collapse of the United States government. Before we go to the phone lines here, I have been informed that people who are calling the 800 number to make a donation need to go back to using extension 03. There was some confusion the other day where I'd been saying 03 all along. Then somebody told me 01, but it turns out that's not working. So it's, again, that 800 number is 800-724-2719, extension 03. Now, folks, it's Christmas time, and all of our hardworking technical staff at Republic Broadcasting have their little stockings up on the wall, and right now those stockings are empty. And you are the only ones who can put a little something into the Christmas stockings for the RBN staff. So it's the holiday season. Be a little bit generous here. All righty, we're going to start taking some phone calls. Tony in Puerto Rico, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mike. You have to give a lot of credit to President Trump. You know, he has a lot of cojones to declare that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. But my question is this. You think George H.W., if he had done the same thing, would have gotten away with it?
No, I don't think he would. And I think all those past presidents, because, I mean, Congress has voted to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel several times in the past, and it's been vetoed. Reagan vetoed it because those other presidents understood that this was going to inflame the Middle East and complicate the issue of U.S. control over these oil nations that we are heavily dependent on. And so, you know, you can say Donald Trump has courage. Yeah, but courage without brains to go with it, you wind up doing some very daring but dangerous things. And that's what's happened here. I really do not think Trump was expecting this backlash, but a careful analysis, talking to some experts, would have said, yeah, this will inflame the region. Hamas has already declared the third intifada, and Israel's bombing Gaza in response. There's going to be a lot of blood spilled over this, and it's splattered all over Donald Trump.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All right, thanks an awful lot, and we're going to go to Ralph in New York. Aloha, Ralph. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, I want to ask a hypothetical question. What's going to be the future of these sexual allegations that you see in Hollywood, the mainstream media, in corporate America? Now you're starting to see these actors. Now you're starting to see Tavis Smiley, another allegation about him, and you're starting to see Russell Simmons, and you see all these well-known public figures now. I mean, isn't there a statute of limitation on all these allegations, or is it just really a witch hunt?
Well, it's a witch hunt, and there are allegations, and in a lot of cases, they're not going to be true. And as I said before, Hollywood is a climate where there are so many people who are willing to trade their bodies for career advancement. And that's probably what lures a lot of these people into this kind of behavior. I mean, it's a wild town. I've got a few stories left over from my days in Hollywood I haven't even shared with Claire yet. So, you know, that's just what the environment is going to be like. But I think these things tend to come in surges. Just like the rape hysteria of the 1990s, it'll grab headlines for a while, and then people will get burned out on it. They'll develop fatigue, story fatigue, and they'll stop paying attention, and then the issue will basically vanish from the public eye, and things will go on as they did before. But
you
right
blame
now,
feminism for all this also, right?
I'm sorry.
You could blame feminism for the agenda is radically, or basically it's feminism. I believe that's the agenda also, right?
Well, feminism is to blame to a degree, because, again, what we're hearing is what they're calling sexual assault today, in many cases, would have been called simply flirting in an earlier age. Now, obviously, when force is involved, that's over the line. Again, they're allegations, and we already know from Roy Moore that these allegations are often made up. I mean, that yearbook entry has been completely discredited, and they did the sexual allegations probably as a cover for the fact that they were going to steal the election. Because if they didn't have some way of damaging Moore or have something to blame his loss on, people were going to be looking at the numbers and saying, this doesn't make sense. It's like that caller we had into the show from Alabama the other day, who said everybody they knew was going to vote for Judge Roy Moore. May have just been dreamed all up to basically say, well, he lost because of the sexual assault allegations. But again, polls were showing the vast majority of people in Alabama weren't giving those allegations any credence for a very simple reason. An allegation is not proof that anything happened.
Right.
It's simply a claim.
Do you start to see more male dominant corporate America that they're saying the statistics that they just keep continue? They don't want to hire women in the workforce in this day and age because a lot of men are afraid of sexual allegations. They're afraid to actually go to the water cooler and just say hi to a woman nowadays. It's gotten to that point.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This is actually going to harm career women's opportunities. Companies are not going to want to hire them because so many false allegations are used by women to get rid of competitors, to get rid of a boss they don't like. And I've personally known women who did things like that. So it is a reality. And
it's ruining careers. It's ruining careers. It's ruining professions of predominantly males. And it's got to a point now where men are becoming so afraid just to say good morning to someone now. I mean, I see it here while working on Wall Street. You know, it's amazing.
It is. And there's always a long-term harm from any of this hysteria. And again, going on back to the rape hysteria of the 1990s, it had its burst in the media where women were crying rape all over the place. And then all of a sudden, it turned out that rape was all of a sudden the second most falsely reported crime in the country. And a lot of innocent guys were having their lives ruined. Some were put in jail and some were fighting back and suing. In fact, down in San Diego, their entire child protective service got shut down because the city couldn't afford the lawsuits that were coming in for constitutional violations. And in the long run, what happened, because of all the fraud and all the deception and the lies, police stopped listening to real victims. They didn't want to take a chance. They were going to get caught up in another one of these rape hoaxes and be publicly humiliated or sued in court. And so in the long run, the rape hysteria actually harmed the genuine rape victims.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing. It's amazing, Mike. So and mainly among the young youth and the millennials today, they even so afraid to talk to women. I see it every day around me here in the corporate environment where I'm at in Lower Manhattan. I see it every day.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Okay, Mike. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Now, here is an interesting development that is going to provide some context for the current increase in friction between NATO and Russia. Because newly declassified documents have come on out, confirmed that in 1990, Western politicians repeatedly assured then-Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev that NATO would never expand east of Germany's borders. And then they broke that promise less than a decade later. And so that is the reason why Russia is very nervous. Russia had a promise from the Western leaders that NATO was going to stop at Germany's border, and then they started pushing forward again. So who is the aggressor here? It isn't Russia. It's NATO. NATO broke their promises, and they're trying to expand eastward, certainly into Ukraine is an obvious one. And speaking of Ukraine, it may be on the verge of another Maidan. Now, we know that the original Maidan, the overthrow of Yanukovych and the installation of Poroshenko, was a classic U.S. regime change operation. But to the world and the people of Ukraine, it was all about bringing down a corrupt regime. And Poroshenko came on in with this promise to fight corruption. Unfortunately, the current government of Ukraine is even more corrupt than the previous one. And now the word is in the streets of Ukraine that it may require a new Maidan to take down Poroshenko's government and put in something that's actually going to work for them. So that could really blow up. All right, let's grab a phone call. Steve in Florida, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you can use my last name since I have a show on the network now. It's not a big deal.
Okay, well, I try not to use last names because I don't want to bring any grief down on your head. Anyway, what can I do for you?
Not a problem. Not a problem. Hey, no, I was going to say about how John McCain always seems to win. You know, it also helps quite a bit when you destroy the records right off the bat, the electronic record track, you know. But,
yes.
You know, and there's no exit polling. You know, so one of the easiest ways to steal an election is have no exit polling to find out how everybody voted. So it all worked out really well. I think this is the same scenario. No exit polling and destroying the records. I don't think John McCain has won an election in the last couple. I
hear that from people in Arizona. In fact, we just had house guests here that live in Arizona, and we were talking about that very issue. And right. they're saying the same thing we're hearing from the people of Alabama. Everybody they know was voting for the other guy, the one that did that ultimately lost. And at this point, after what we witnessed last year, it's time for Americans to realize our election system is totally corrupt. It is rigged. We managed through just sheer force of popular will to prevent Hillary from taking the White House last November. And look how everybody went into a panic and a tantrum over that. But we need to understand that the election system is rigged. And if we don't have honest elections, if we do not actually get to choose who's going to lead the nation, then we're not a republic. We're not a democracy. We're a banana dictatorship, if you will. And we're showing all the signs of it, the decayed infrastructure. And again, just like Ukraine, out of control corruption. And we're seeing a government that's constantly at war with itself, the Department of Justice and the FBI against Donald Trump. That's a very, very serious situation. And again, we saw a lot of the same things going on in the Soviet Union just before it collapsed.
I agree. Hey, you know, another thing on this Beverly Nelson, who the forgery on the yearbook. Now, she evidently... she should be prosecuted for filing a false statement. That's a prosecution waiting to happen right there.
There are a lot of prosecutions waiting to happen, but unfortunately, the fix is in. And Hillary should have been prosecuted. A lot of Hillary's people should have been prosecuted. But right now, only Republicans are being gone after by the system.
Yeah. You know, this whole sexual witch hunt going on, Michael, is going to put a real damper on in the office place that you can't even make a comment that one of your female coworkers that looks nice today, she wore a nice dress. You can't make that comment for, you know, she may just say, well, I think the way you said that was in a sexual tone. You know, it's going to put a real damper on the office place and dating, for God's sakes.
Yes. It's one of the reasons why I'm glad I have such a happy marriage. I don't have to go through that nonsense. But again, these things are a matter of fashion, or let's be a little bit more honest, brainwashing. And the example I like to use, of course, is that when I was working in Germany back in the 1980s, the women in that office expected flirtation. They expected compliments. If you didn't say nice things about their dress and their hair and their makeup and everything, you would find your paperwork was getting mysteriously misfiled. They'd be very insulted and angry. Today in the United States, because of feminism, women are being told that any comment by a man is basically a red warning flag that you're about to get attacked. And that's nonsense. Sometimes it's just conversation. Sometimes you're trying to be polite. So, how do you build a team out of a staff where you've got one half of them terrified of even talking to the other half?
Right, and we're not supposed to notice the breast augmentation either. They go out of their way to do the breast augmentation. We're not supposed to notice that either.
Well, you know, there was one incident at a studio in Los Angeles I was working at, and again, this was when this whole nonsense about feminism was really starting to crank on up. And there was a girl who worked there, and she was part of the technical staff. She wasn't front office, so there wasn't really a dress code. And she used to walk around basically in this very thin leotard and just waiting for a guy to make some kind of a comment at which she'd just scream at him. And fortunately, she didn't last there very long.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go. The phone lines are open. Now, let's get on over to Iran. Everybody's dumping on Iran. Nikki Haley was out there with a pallet of broken-up hardware she insists is an Iranian missile that Yemen used, so forth and so on. It's Saddam's nuclear weapons all over again. It's the Lusitania not smuggling weapons to Britain all over again. It's the USS Maine and a Spanish mine all over again. That's how they get these wars going. So apparently, according to this story in news at antiwar.com, the United States is now planning to sanction Iran because of the worsening conditions in Yemen. Now, let's back up here and take a look, because what we have here is Saudi Arabia acting as a U.S. proxy going on in and bombing the heck out of Yemen. They're dealing with that cholera outbreak that may be actually be a biological weapon attack. But we're going to say it's all Yemen's fault. It's all Yemen's fault. It's all Iran's fault. And we're going to sanction them. We're going to hit them with more sanctions. There's no logic to it whatsoever. It's just going after Iran for the sake of going after Iran. And I watched part of Nikki Haley's presentation where she was presenting her irrefutable evidence that Iran was deliberately violating international obligations. And it was rather interesting to watch because there was no evidence. There was nothing but accusations without any proof whatsoever. And I remember listening to Nikki Haley's description of Iran and thinking that it actually was much better suited to describe Israel, which routinely violates their international obligations. And, of course, we know that the United States has walked away from treaties. We know that the United Nations was in violation of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Act with regard to Iran. But I think this propaganda push against Iran is being run up because next month Donald Trump is supposed to recertify the P5+1 deal, and I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's going to decertify it in order to open the door to yet another war with yet another country who has not done anything to us. We're going to go to the telephones. Kevin in West Virginia, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Mike, when you wake up in the mornings, do you hear do-do-do-do-do-do? Just wondering.
What? No.
The Twilight Zone thing, you know, being crazy, you know.
I'm just no, I don't. And thank you for the phone call. All right. Now then, getting on back to the news. So everybody's piling onto Iran right now. And I think what they're telegraphing is that Trump is going to decertify the P5+1 deal and walk away from it. And that, of course, means that the U.S. can go back to screaming about Iran's non-existent nuclear weapons, just like they were screaming about Iraq's non-existent nuclear weapons as a prelude to outright war. And I think there should be a cautionary note here that, first of all, the U.S. did not come out on top in Syria. They don't want to admit it, but they failed to achieve their objectives there. And they're still having to garrison all of these countries that they've gone in and messed around with. And Russia has already said, if Iran is attacked, Russia will come in on the side of Iran. And I don't think we want to go to war with Russia. Now, Israel, of course, is swaggering all over the Middle East because they've got nuclear weapons that nobody's supposed to know about, but we all do. And all of the other Middle Eastern nations justly fear that. But if Russia gets involved, then all of a sudden Israel has to deal with the reality they could suffer a nuclear strike if they dare use their weapons. And there's another aspect of that as well. Israel has been lying about their nuclear weapons for decades. To go ahead and use one right now would basically remind the entire world that Israel has been lying about this all along. Would remind everybody that Israel isn't this weak little helpless nation, constantly terrorized and threatened by its Arab Muslim neighbors. And of course, the American people would be justly upset because it is against the law for our government to be sending U.S. tax dollars to any nation that has nuclear weapons that refuses to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty and allow IAEA inspections. And I think people would say it's time for a refund. Now, getting on over to North Korea, Donald Trump is now talking about establishing a complete naval blockade against North Korea. And Pyongyang is saying it will take self-defensive measures against any blockade as it considers such a move an act of war. And yes, a naval blockade is an act of war. Now, story coming out of shtfplan.com. President Trump's national security advisor is warning that now is the time to avoid a war with North Korea. H.R. McMaster was speaking at an event for the British think tank Policy Exchange and was basically saying, we've got to stop this now.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.